The Eddie B. Sit edition and audio series of the Talmud Bavli.
Gemara Baba Metzi'a. Daf Chaf Aleph. Today's daf is being studied. La'ilu Nishmat Marat Zekanati Yafa Batsara Ve'ilu Nishmat Avraham Ben Esther Ruach Hashem Tanihem Began Eden Amen. Today's daf is being studied. The Refuah Shlema Hayim Aharon Ben Le'ah. אין נא רפנה לו, רפואת הנפש ורפואת הגוף, ורפואתו כרבה לבו. וכן ירסום ולומר אמן. We begin today's daf on Chaf Amud Bet, and we are starting from אם יש אמהם סימפונות, which is actually on the second wide line. And the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah that we're talking about a malve, a lender. So the Mishnah quoted a situation of a malveh. He has shtarot. Amongst the shtarot, he found a shovar. A shovar is a receipt, meaning that the loveh paid him back. However, it's a little strange that the malveh is holding the receipt. Usually the loveh gets the receipt to prove that it was paid. In any event, the Mishnah said, "Im yesh emahem simponot, ya'aseh Ma she besimfonot." So he has to respect the simfon, the shovar, the receipt, and he has to assume that the shtar was paid. Amar Rav Yirmiya bar Abba, Amar Rav simfon hayotze mitachat yedei malve. It's a shovar again, a receipt that's found in the possession of the malve. Afalpi shekatuv bichtav yado. Even though it's written in his own handwriting, meaning the malveh himself wrote it, eno ela kimsahek upasul, which means we don't pay any attention to the shovar. Kimsahek is like he's joking around with the loveh, and it's pasul, and if we still can collect with the shtar. The Mefarshim explained that not only in the case where a sofer wrote it, in the case where a sofer wrote the shovar, so then we can say that he told the sofer to write it just so he can have it ready. But that doesn't mean it was paid. He wants to have it ready just in case the loveh comes to pay, so the malveh will have it ready. So not only when the sofer wrote it, you say it's nothing, but even when he himself wrote it, in his own writing, still we say it's nothing, it's pasul, and he was only joking around. The Gemara is going to say that now. Lo mebaya katuv bichtab yad sofer. Not only in a case where he wrote the shovad by a sofer. You can say that the malveh met a sofer. He told me, do me a favor, write me a shovad, just in case the guy comes to pay me, so I'll have it ready. Because sometimes the loveh wants to pay back, but he says, I'm not paying you back unless you give me your receipt. So he wants to have the receipt ready. But just because he has the receipt doesn't mean it was paid back. But even if he wrote it in his own handwriting, still we say you don't pay any attention to it. He could still collect. Why? Savar, pasul. Meaning the shovar is pasul. Why? Savar, because the malveh figures like this. Dilma mitrame ve'ate ben Hashem ashot ve'ka parali. What's going to happen? Maybe the loveh is going to come to my house Erev Shabbat, right before Ben Hashem Ashot, and there's not going to be enough time for me to write him a shovar, and he's not going to want to pay me. So he says, "The ilu avina le lo yahiv dizuzef." I don't give him a shovar; he's not going to give me the money. Echtov ana. So let me write it now to have it in my possession. Dechi aitel dizuzef aitel. So when he comes to give me my money back, I'm able to give him back the shovar. So therefore, the hadush of Rabbi Miyah, and that's the basic hadush of the next piece of the Gemara, is when a malveh finds a shovar or a simfon, that's shown in the Gemara, when we find this in his possession, pay no attention to it. It's pasul, and the shtar still could be collected. Because we say, again, the logic, he's only writing it to have it ready for when the loveh pays back. Now the Gemara is going to ask a host of questions on Rabbi Miyah. Tenan, we learned in our Mishnah. Im yesh emahem simfonot, ya'ase mashib simfonot. Right, that's a head-on collision question. The Mishnah clearly says, if he finds a shtar this is the Malveh, and he finds a Simfon with it, Yaseh Mashe B'Simfonot, respect the Simfon, respect the receipt. You got to assume that what? It was paid. Whereas the Rabbi Yehiyah says, no, you don't pay attention to the Simfon. How can he go against the Mishnah? Kedamar of Safra. So we can answer it based on what Rav Safra said, which we're going to see later on. Shenimsa ben shtarot kiru'in, which means, where did he find the Simfon? He found the Simfon amongst his torn shtarot. So here too in the Mishnah, we can say Shemisa'o ben shtarot kiru'in, which means he found already ripped shtarot. And next to the ripped shtarot, he found already a shtovah. So you could assume a ripped shtar already means probably was paid already. That's why it was torn. And he found the shtovah next to it. So Mistama, if it's found next to the torn shtarot, already you could assume that it was paid. But Rav Yirmiyah is talking about where the shtarot are good shtarot. He found the shtovah next to a normal shtarot that are whole. So therefore, you got to assume that the shtar wasn't paid. And therefore you assume that the shuvah is nothing. So there's a difference where you find the shuvah. Again, the Mishnah's case is talking about where you found it. Ben shtarot kiru'in. Comes to Gemara, he asks another question on the Yirmiyah. And we're going to really answer the same answer. Tashema nimsan echad ben shtarotav. A guy found, let's say amongst his shtarot, it says, shtarosh and Yosef ben Shimon parua. It says, the shtar Yosef ben Shimon is paid. Now, he found this amongst his shtarot, but he lent two Yosef ben Shimon's. Then he has one receipt that says Yosef ben Shimon is paid up. Shtarot sheneem piruim, which means both Yosef ben Shimon's do not have to pay. On the contrary, the Malveh has to bring it a ayah that it's the other Yosef ben Shimon. That means both of them are considered paid up until the Malveh can prove which Yosef ben Shimon paid. But what do you see again? That you have to respect the Shovar. Whereas the Rabbi Yirmiyah said, nah, Shovar, pay no attention to it if it's in the Malveh's possession. Again, the Gemara answers, Kedamar Rav Safra, Shenimsa ben Shtarot Kiru'in. Achanamesh, Shenimsa ben Shtarot Kiru'in. Again, the case over here we just read from the Braita, or the this Mishnah actually comes from Baba Batra. It's talking about where he found the shuvah amongst his torn shtarot. And therefore you could assume that the shuvah is legal. It's a good receipt. Because the shtarot already torn, that means he probably, the shtar was paid up. And therefore there's a difference where you find the simfon. Tashema, the Gemara asked another question against the Rabbi Yirmiyah. Here we're talking about yetomim that are coming to collect the chob of their father. Their father left a debt, and now they're coming to the debt, which means they're owed. The father's owed money, I should say. And the Yetomim are coming now to collect it. So what happens? So they go to the people that they're going to collect it from. And they have a shtar chov, right? That they're owed the money. But they don't know if it was paid or not. They just find the document, but they don't know if it was paid or not. These yetomim. So they say, Shevu'a shelo pekadanu abba. We swear, they must swear, that what? We swear that our father did not tell us before he died that the shtar is paid. Vishelo amalanu abba. And not that he didn't tell us either when he was healthy. And we did not find amongst the shtarot of our father shtar ze parua, which means, and we did not find a receipt, which is mashma, if they would have found a receipt, they would respect it, but we didn't find the receipt. Mashma, if they found the receipt, so you have to respect the shovar. Therefore it was paid. Question against the Rabbi Yirmiyah. Same answer, Amar Rav Safra. Here's where he said it. Shenimsa ben shtarot kiru'in, which means what they're saying is, we swear that we did not find the shovad amongst the ripped shtarot. But in Nechirameh, if they found it amongst the ripped shtarot, then you got to assume that it was indeed paid. So that's basically the answer. Same questions they're asking from all over the place on Yerubi Demiyah. And the answer is basically where you found the shovad. Tashema, another question. Simfon. That's the receipt again. That's the shovar sheyesh alav edim,
which means it's signed and it's held by the hands of the Malve. And the Malve is claiming that it wasn't paid. And the Loveh is claiming, no, I paid back. So the deen is Yitkayem Bechotmav, which means whoever signed the Shrovad, so they should come along and verify their signatures. And once they verify their signatures, so the Shrovad is a legal document, and therefore the Loveh is Patur. Question against it, again, so long as you verify the Shrovad, we believe with the Shovar, even though it's in the hands of the Malveh. Emma, the Gemara says, Yitkayem Mechotmav, which means, don't read it Yitkayem Bechotamav, Ela Yitkayem Mechotamav, which means, you ask the Edim, not to verify the Shtar, you ask the Edim that signed the Shovar, the Shailina Lele Sahadeh, you ask them, Iparua Ilo Parua. Yes, they witnessed themselves. Did you see payment or not? Which means, if they say that we saw the payment, so finished. That means Love is Patur. And if they didn't see Pinaon, so therefore the Shovar means nothing. Which means, we do believe a Malveh. When he says, I found the Shovar, you don't have to pay. Shovar means nothing if it's in the Malveh's possession, just like Rabbi Meir said. In this case, Love is talking about where they're saying, if the witnesses themselves come along and say, no, we saw it was paid up, then the Loveh is Patur. But otherwise, just on a Shovar, it's not enough like Rabbi Meir. Now the Gemara asks one more question against Rabbi Meir. Tashema, we have a Braita. Simfon, Sheyesh Alav Edim, Kasher. You have a Simfon, it's in the possession of the Malveh. And has witnesses that signed it. So it's kasher. And therefore, you see that what? That you assume that the shtar was paid. Question against the Ben Miyah. My edim, and what are we assuming edim? It's a shtar sheyesh, some fun sheyesh tav edim. Edim, edekiyum. Oh, edim means a betin. We're answering the question. My edim edekiyum. Not that it has witnesses that signed it. It means that betin made on it a henpek, which means once Bet Din makes a henpek on a document that says the document is valid, even Rabbi Meir will agree that you have to assume that the Loveh paid. That's the edim. The edim of Bet Din, they established that the shtar was actually legal. Hachinami mistabra, mediktani sefa, from the fact that bright that says in the sefa, she'en alav edim pasul, a simfon without witnesses is pasul. Ma'en alav edim, if there's no witness that signed it at all, you have to tell me it's pasul. Of course it's pasul. Nobody signed it. It means that the betin did not put a henpek on it. The betin did not certify it. Oh, so all it is a shovar in the hands of a malveh. Shovar in the hands of a malveh. You believe the malveh to say it wasn't paid yet, and he just wrote it to have it ready. So therefore, you have no question against the malveh. The last piece of the perek, Gufa, we learned earlier in a Braita, Daf Chaf, Simfon, Sheyesh Alav Edim. You have a Simfon, that what? That has on it Edim, meaning that Bet Din made a henpek on it to say what? That the signatures are legal and the document is valid. Yitkayem Bechotamav. Then you fulfill the Shovar, and therefore you assume that what? It is indeed paid. In Alav Edim. Oh, but let's say this Edim that signed the Shovar, but Bet Din did not certify it. Ve'yotze mitachat yedei shalish. Oh, the Malveh gave the Shovar to a third party. Not the Malveh and not the Loveh, but someone that they equally trust. That what? That he should hold the Shovar until the Loveh actually pays. And then he'll give it to the Loveh. And they both agree that he is the third party. Or she yotze le'achar chitum shtarot. Or let's say, we see that what? That the Shovar is actually written on the shtar itself. Which means, on the shtar itself that the Malveh has, on the bottom of it he wrote, paid in full. You see the Shovar is written on the shtar itself. In that case, kasher. So So the Gemara explains, Yotze mitachat yedei shalish. When it's in the third party, he's holding it. De'ahim ne'madve de shalish. Of course, because the madveh trusted the shalish. He trusted the third party to hold it. And therefore, when the shalish says it was paid, finished. Since the madveh trusts him, he cannot say or contradict him and say that it was not paid. And therefore, correct. And therefore, the shalish is believed. Because again, the malveh trusted him. You trust me, so you got to believe me when I tell you that it was paid. In the last case is yotze lahar hitum shtarut, when the actual shovar is on the document itself. Nameh, it's also you believe it. Exactly. If the loved didn't pay back, the maveh is not writing anything on the shtar. When you write something on the shtar, already you weaken the shtar. If he wrote paid in full on the bottom of the shtar, he can't just say, nah, I wrote it just in case he comes to pay me, so I'll have it ready. No, a maveh doesn't do that on the shtar itself. He doesn't want to ruin the shtar. So therefore, in those two cases, where it's either held by a third party, and the third party says it was paid, so you trust the shovar, or they actually wrote it on the document itself, then you trust the shovar, and the loved does not have to pay. Hadran, alach, shenayim, ohazim. We begin the second perek of Baba Metzi'ah. Elu Metzi'ot shelo, ve'elu chayav le'achriz. This perek talks about a person finds an object. So certain objects that you find, you're allowed to keep. Well, certain items that you find, you're obligated to mechriz. You have to announce it in order for the person that lost it to come forward and you return it. Elu mitziot shelo. The following items that are found, the person can keep it. Matza perot mefuzarim. Let's say a person found scattered fruits. Now, there's no siman on scattered fruits. Normally, a person could come along and say, well, I have a siman, I have a sign. He can give a certain siman. But scattered fruits, as she says, the owner for sure gave up hope, as she calls it, hefker. He even relinquished ownership. Therefore, the guy that finds him in the street, scattered fruit, he can keep it. Ma'ot mefuzarot, same thing. He found scattered money. Again, we're talking about over here where there's no siman, therefore the guy gives up on it, and therefore you can keep it, because when you picked it up already, the guy, you could assume, made you, she had no chance of getting it back, because how can he get it back? He cannot give a siman. Kirichot birshut harabim. What is kirichot? Rashi says, small bundles of like wheat or grains that are in the birshut harabim. Also, there's no siman, Rashi says. Really, maybe there was a siman, but guess what happens in the Rashut Rabim? People trample on it. Rashi says, Shakot Dashin Alayu. And even if there was a siman on it, it's trampled already by the time the people step on it. Ve'igule debela. What is igule debela? So that is talking about dried figs. That they make it like into a cake. They press it into a cake. Kikaro chil nahtom. That would be the baker's bread. She says all baker's bread is the same. You know, they make like in a factory, the same bread. If it would be a private person's bread that he makes in the house, he probably could have a siman. Because everybody has their own way of making the bread. But a baker's bread is all the same. It's uniform. So therefore, no siman. You could keep it. Maharozot shel dagim, that is a string of fish. The fishermen, they used to take the fish and string them. That's the way they used to carry them. It was very common. V'hatichot shel basar, or pieces of meat, v'gizeh semer alikuchot b'medinatan, which means you have pieces of wool that are taken from the Medina, from like the factory, or from the place of where they process it. So these things over here, from the uman, from the craftsman, so these things over here also do not have a siman. It's still raw, it's still unprocessed. V'anitzeh pishtan. So that would be like balls of pishtan, of flax. V'lishonot shel argaman. That would be combed wool that looks in the shape of a tongue. That's why they call it lishonot. It's combed and it is purple. Hare elu shelot. Devrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says all these cases, common denominator, you could keep them because there is no siman. and therefore the owner makes yi'ush, he relinquishes ownership, and therefore you could keep it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol sheyesh bo shinui, chayav lechriz, that any item that's different, that has a shinui, that has a change to it, you're obligated to announce. For example, ketzad, matzah igul, you found this pressed figs, uptocho heres, but inside of it there was a piece of pottery. That's not common. Kikar, you found a loaf of bread, uptocho ma'ot, there's money inside of it. Rabbi Shimon el Azar omer, kol keli an poria, in hayav le'achriz. We don't know what keli an poria is. We just know the law that you don't have to machriz, you don't have to announce it, you can keep it. We will see in the Gemara what Anporia is. Comes the Gemara, Matzah Perot Mefuzarin. You found scattered fruit. Now the Gemara has to explain to us, what is the ratio? How much fruit did you lose, and in what area did you lose it, that we say a person will give up and make Yush? V'kama Amar B'Yitzhak Kav Be'arba Amot. We're talking about where he lost, where he dropped a kav. A kav is a shi'ur. Be'arba amot, in four amot. Now again, if a person finds scattered fruit, one kav in four amot, you could assume that the guy made yush and keep it. So Gebra says, what are you talking? Hechidame, what's the case? I derech nefila, if you can see that it fell, which means you see that it fell, the guy dropped it and it fell, afilu tuva nameh, even more, which means even more than a kav, which means even if it's closer, which means a kav and four amot, it's scattered around within four amot. But if it fell, so why only a kav? Even more than a kav. I mean, even if they're closer to each other within the four amot, because more fell, it should also be considered yi'ush. And if you can see that it was actually placed, you can see from the way it's on the ground, you see it's actually placed on the ground, afilu batzid mehachename, even less, that she says, why? Because the guy is going to come back. So therefore, the Gemara has a question, where did you come up with this shi'ur? Where did you come up with the shiur of kav v'arba amot? It should all depend on how you found it. If you found it derech nefila, even more than four amot. Again, the Gemara is questioning over here. If you tell me it's derech nefila, if you could ascertain that it fell, so afilu tuva nameh, even more, which means even within four amot, if it was more than a kav, a person should be able to keep it. If it's derech hinuah, if it was placed with kavana, afilu batzir ma'achin nameh lo, even if it was less than a kav in this shi'ur, he should be able to, he should have to leave it, because the guy is going to come back. So therefore, the Gemara's question is, where did they get kav v'arba amot? L'chaora, it should all depend how it was placed. If it was placed, the guy's coming back. If it fell, so the guy left it. The shi'urim should not make a difference. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rav Ukba bar Chama, b'machnashta, v'vedare askinan. We're talking about, over here, the threshing ground, which means the guy went to the threshing place over there where they threshed the wheat, and he collected whatever he collected, and then after he gathered all the grains, he took the ikar and he left the whatever was left over. Oh, so now the Gemara comes along and analyzes, which means really we're talking about a guy. How do we know if the guy's not going to come back? So the Gemara says, if you go to the threshing ground and you see a kav in four amot, then you could assume the guy is not coming back. And the Gemara explains, kav v'arba amot, you have one kav. It's not that much. And it's scattered in four amot. Denafish tarhayu, it's a big tarha to go collect it in the four amot. Lo tarach inish. A guy's not going to toil himself. Velo hadar atev v'shekinehu. He's not going to come back and get it. Afkure mafkar lehu. Therefore, he makes it efker. However, batzir mehacheh, less than this, which means, if let's say the kav was scattered in less than a 4 amot area, yeah, tarach vehadar, he'll go back. Ateh v'shakil lehu, and bring him. Velo mafkar lehu. So therefore, the Gemara says a wonderful answer. We're talking about over here, you didn't find him in the public domain. Public domain, it shouldn't make a difference. Just look, if it looks like it was placed, so he's coming back. If it was looking like it was full, he's not coming back. Well, that's talking about where you found it in the threshing ground. Now the she'ela is, you don't know, is the guy coming back? Maybe he left it there or not. How could you assume? How do you know? So Gemara says, you look at the ratio. How much? In what area? Kavin for Amot, it's too little for a guy to go back now and matriach himself to collect. In 4 amot, he's got to walk in that area. He's not coming back. But less than that, in 4 amot, and again, that's a big tirha, he's not coming back. However, less than that, which means if it's less than 4 amot, it's a kav in a small area. So it's worth it for him to come back. It's not such a tirha. That's the Gemara's case. So when you learn the Mishnah, Matza perot mefuzarin, where did you find perot mefuzarin? In the threshing ground. And what's the deal of the Mishnah? You got to look how it is placed. Kav barba amot, keep it. Less than 4 amot, guy's coming back. What's the logic? It's not such a toil to go less than 4 amot to collect these items. Now the Gemara is going to ask a host of questions. Ba'er b'Yirmiya. Hatzi kav b'shte amot mahu. Let's say you find half a kav that is in 2 amot, which means in the 2 amot by 4 amot, which means have your 4 amot by 4 amot area. But let's say it was found on the bottom 2 amot, a half a kav. Mao, kav arba amot. When it comes to kav arba amot, tamamai, b'shum din afish terhayu. Guy's not coming back because he's not going to walk the whole area to collect it. Hatzi kav b'shte amot. But when it's scattered only in 2 amot, kevan din afish terhayu, since such and such a terha, lo mafkid, he will not be mafkidit. Or din mao, maybe no. I can look the other way. Mishum din lo hashiv. Maybe the whole reason why he doesn't come back with a kav in 4 amot, because a kav isn't significant. That's right. And kol sheken, half a kav b'shte amot, he's not coming back, because also it's not significant. Which basically, what I want to know, what's the real reason why a kav in 4 amot? Is it because he doesn't want to toil? It's a toil to go collect things in a 4 amot radius. So then if it's in 2 amot, he will come back. Or is it that a kav is not hashuv, it's not worth it to go back for a kav. So if it's not worth to go back for a kav, certainly it's not worth to go back for a half a kav. That's the Gemara's first question. Gemara says now, second question, kabayim b'shmona amot, mao. Let's say you have 2 kav in 8 amot. The same ratio, you doubled it. Kav barba amot amam b'shmona afish terhayu. If you say that the reason why the guy doesn't go back when it's scattered in 4 amot, because it's a big tirha to walk in the foot, to go walk in 4 amot to collect everything, because you can't kabayim b'shmona amot. All the more so when you have to walk 8 amot, kemandin afisha tirhayu, tafeh, since it's more tirha to walk in 8 amot to collect everything, mafkadu, or dilma mishum de lo hashive, or maybe you'll say because no, a kav is not hashuv. However, the kabayim b'shmona amot, but maybe when it's 2 kavs, kemandin hashive lo mafkadu. So that's the Gemara's question. Same question. Gemara has one more question. A few more questions. Kav shum shemin. What if it's not a kav of wheat? Let's say it's a kav of simsum. A kav of sesame seeds. Barba amot mahu. In the same ratio. Kav in 4 amot. Ma. Kav barba amot. Tamamai mishum de lo hashive. The reason why it doesn't go back on taiko is it's not hashuv. It's not worth for it to go back for a kav of wheat. Vishum shemin came on the hashive, but hashum shemin are very hashuv, they're very expensive. No mafkar, no, he's not going to be mafkirit. Or dilma, mishum the nafish terhayu. Or do you say, nah, it's a terha for him to go collect these items, the wheat. Because you can't shum shemin, or the mussels, sesame is very hard, it's very small. Or the mussels, very tedious for him to collect. Kevin the nafish terhayu, tafeh, it's very difficult for him to collect. Mafkar lehu. Next question. Therefore, maybe he's mafkirit. Kav tamare ba'arba amot. Let's say it's a kav of dates in 4 amot, kav rimone ba'arba amot, or kav of pomegranates in 4 amot, ma'u. Kav ba'arba amot ma'amai mishum de lo hashive. So I'll tell you, the reason why it doesn't go back for wheat is because it's not hashuv. So kav tamne ba'arba amot, kav rimone ba'arba amot, namek, kav de lo hashive, ba'afkano. I'll say also, rimonim and timarim are not hashuv, therefore it's not going to go back. O dilma mishum de nefishit terhayu. So maybe you'll say, no, to collect the kernels of wheat, it's a big terha. However, since they're bigger, so it's easier for him to collect. So the Gemara asks on all these questions, what is the deen? And the Gemara answers on all of them, tiku. Again, so basically the four questions that the Gemara is asking over here is really based on one reason, or one basic question, that what's the reason why a guy is mafkir a kav in 4 amot? Is it because it's not hashuv, the kav is not hashuv, or because it is a big terha for him to go collect it? So therefore, they asked basically the same question in four different ways. The Gemara's final answer is, it is indeed a tiku. The rabbis came along and said, the Rambam writes, you have to be mahmir in this tiku, safek de oraita, therefore you cannot keep it yourself, and therefore you cannot keep the perot. That's the opinion of Rambam. Now we go into one of the main subjects of the second perek, and that is the machloket between Abaye and Rava on the subject of Yi'ush Shelo Midat. What is this subject of Yi'ush Shelo Midat? A little introduction before we go into the subject. Subject is like this. Person finds an item. Okay? Now, at the time that he found the item, the owner maybe wasn't aware that he lost it yet, and he did not make Yi'ush yet. Now, even though he's going to make Yi'ush later on, so the question is, an item that a person is going to make Yi'ush on later on, do we say that when the guy picks it up, it's considered as if he made Yi'ush now, and therefore he would be able to keep it? If you say Yi'ush Shelo Midat, have Yi'ush, because he says it. Once the guy finds out about it, he's going to give up. He's going to relinquish his ownership, therefore he can keep it. Well, you say no. Bottom line, when you picked it up, he didn't have Yi'ush yet. Therefore, even though later when he's going to find out, he's going to make Yi'ush, that's not good. You have to pick it up already holding by Yi'ush. So that's the Gemara's question. Itmar, actually the Gemara's fact. We have a statement. Yi'ush Shelo Midat, which means an item that you picked up that the owner yet did not make Yi'ush yet, but when he finds out about it, he will make Yi'ush. Abaye amar lo have Yi'ush. It's not considered Yi'ush, and therefore the guy that picked it up has to return it. Rava amar have Yi'ush. Now before the Gemara goes into analyzing this, we have to know what case Abaye and Rava were actually arguing. So the Gemara says, "Davar shvedavar sheyesh bo siman." If the item that was found has a siman, kule alma lo pelige lo have yeush. Everybody agrees that even if the owner makes yeush, the guy that finds it is not allowed to keep it. Even though at the end, after you picked it up, you heard that the guy made Yi'ush, you cannot keep it. Why? Lo have Yi'ush. Of course, when the guy picked it up, there was a siman on it. It wasn't destined, it wasn't automatic, the guy's going to make Yi'ush. Even though he might have made Yi'ush later on, doesn't matter. When you picked it up before Yi'ush. And you picked up an item that the guy probably was not going to make Yi'ush on, because it has a siman. So therefore, when there's a siman and he finds out that it was lost, he doesn't make Yi'ush. He says, there's a siman. Then I'll take it. So in a case where there's a siman, Everybody agrees when you pick it up, even though the guy makes yeush later on, bepo'al, in actuality, you cannot keep it because it came to your hands be'isur. Now let's discuss the second case that they don't argue on. Bezuto shel yam. Zuto shel yam is like an overflowing river that as it overflows its banks, zuto is like the sort of overflowing, so as it overflows its banks, and then it retracts, so it brings up a lot of lost objects, or it brings up a lot of different items that might have been in the water. Ubishliluto shel nahar. Or let's say you have the river that also went over its banks, and it flows onto the ground, a lot of objects that might have been in the river. In that case, when you pick it up, even if it has a siman on it, Rahmana Sharia, the Torah says mutar. We're going to say later on in the Chabet. Why? Because this item over here was lost in totality. And even if it had a siman, nobody's going to find it. And the guy gives up hope, he doesn't think anybody's even going to find it. So in that case, whatever he agrees, even if there is a siman, when you find it, you can keep it. Because for sure, the guy relinquished ownership because he says, no way nobody's going to find it. Keep it lige. So where's the argument to Rabbi Yenava? Tavar she'en bo siman. Oh, on an item that does not have a siman. Abaye amar lo have a yi'ush. Abaye says, it's not yi'ush. Because bottom line, the owner, he does not know that it fell from him, and therefore that's why they make yi'ush. Rava amar have a yi'ush. When he finds out, it's going to make yi'ush, because there's no siman. Memar amar, simana let the big avai, I don't have a siman. Therefore, it's considered already as if he made yush in the beginning. So basically, if you want to crystallize it, the mahlok of Abayin Rabbah is, do you need a yush bepo'al, a yush in actuality? Or is it enough to say that for sure when the guy finds out, he's going to make yush? So therefore, we can consider it as if the item came to your hands, beheter, and therefore, it's automatic, he's going to make yush, therefore you can keep the item. Now the Gemara is going to ask a host of questions against Abaye and Rava. So let's read a few of them. The Gemara brings a siman here. Pamgash and Pamkakti and Kachsa Az. These are all abbreviations of all the questions that are going to come up now. Tashema, for example, the first question is from Perot. That's the Pe. Tashema, we're not in our Mishnah. Perot mefuzarin. What do we say? Scattered fruits. Oh, scattered fruits, there's no siman. And what did it say in the Mishnah? That why he could keep it? He didn't know it fell from him. Oh, and therefore you're saying you could keep it. So must be what? Yeushelo midat. Have yeush. Proof to Rava. Question against Abaye. Amar Rav Ugvavar Hama. Hachab mechnashta devedare askinan. No, we learned already on the Amud Rishon. He knows it's there. He left it there. He was talking about a case where the guy's in the threshing grounds over there, where he collected whatever he's taking, and the rest he left it. That's Avedam Midat. He left it there on purpose. Even Abaye agrees, the guy left it there on purpose. Okay, so he relinquishes ownership. He made it if scared. So we have no proof to a case where a guy drops something. He doesn't know he dropped it yet. That's a case where he left it there intentionally. No question. Tashema ma'ot mefuzarot ere'elu shelo. Oh, second case in the Mishnah. You found money. There's no siman on the money. So what do we say? You could keep it. What do you mean? Amai. Ha, he doesn't know it fell. And if we see what? That when he finds out, so you see that the Rabbah's right. Hatam namek. Rabbi Yitzchak. Tamar, Rabbi Yitzchak says, Adam, asu lemashmish b'chiso, b'chol sh'am sh'a. A guy always is feeling his money in his pocket. The guy always is checking his pockets. Therefore, we'll say in the Mishnah that the guy finds out right away. It's not Yushelo Midat. He uses immediately. If we have no daya to Yushelo Midat when he finds out. Nah. The second it falls, already he makes a Yush. That's not a Yushelo Midat. He makes Yush right away because already he knows the second he lost it. Because he's always putting his hands in his pocket. Which means he probably made yush even before the guy found it. Therefore, when the guy finds it, even Rabbi Meir will agree. The Yush was made already. The cake of pressed figs. Or the case of the baker's bread. If it dropped, if it fell, he can keep it. I might rather than if I'm in there. The guy doesn't know he dropped it yet. What must be Yush? Since these items are heavy, he realized it, and therefore he probably made use before the guy picked it up, before he found it, before it came into the guy's hands. If we have no question against Abaye. One more question. Again, the tongues of wool. It says the guy can keep it. When the guy picked it up, the guy that lost didn't know yet. He's saying, Yush lo midat tavi yush. Since these items are expensive, a guy's always feeling his pockets to see if they're there. Therefore, it's going to be taxed by money. Therefore, similarly, we say that what he probably knew about it before the guy found it. If we made yush, therefore, when the guy found it, it came to his hand. That's not yush lo midat. That already guy made yush. A guy finds money in the Bet Knesset or in the Bet Midrash. Bechol makom shalabi mitzuyim shamor, in any place that the people trample. You can keep it. Because we say the owners make Yush. Again, he doesn't know that it fell. Therefore, it is Yush. Shalom without question against Abaye. Amar Bitzhak, Adam Masul Mashmash Bechizo Bechol Shah. No, when it comes to money, a person always is feeling his pocket. Therefore, he probably made Yush before the guy found it. Because he's always feeling his pocket. Therefore, he knew. Then by the time the guy found the Yush was made already. Therefore, we don't have a question against Abaye. You got to give me a case when a guy picked it up. He didn't make Yush yet. That's Yush Shalom Midah, but he's going to make Yush. But in all these cases, Abaye answers, no, the Yush is made immediately because either they're heavy or he is always feeling his pocket. Therefore, he knows when it's supposed to be the Yush was made before it was actually found.
Tashema, the Gemara continues. The Gemara is going to bring now a question against Abaye. Tashema, me'ematai kol adam mutarim beleket. Leket is one of the entitlements that the aniyim get from the fields. A person is collecting, he's harvesting his wheat, so the things that he leaves behind, so the aniyim have a right to come and collect it. That's called leket. So how long, until when, or from what time do we say that everybody is permissible to collect leket? You see, leket is really the money of the aniyim. However, after a certain point, the aniyim themselves, they give up hope. The aniyim themselves, they give up hope, and therefore it would be permissible for everybody to benefit from the leket. So the Gemara says, from what time is everybody permissible in leket, even the non-aniyim? For when these guys called the Nimushot go into the field. Gemara says, and my Nimushot. What is this Nimushot? Amar Rabbi Yohanan, Sabe, old people, the Azle Atigra, that walk with their stick. Which means, after the Aniyim go through the field, so then you had a group of, let's say, poor people, old men, that walk very slowly with their stick, and they rummage every inch of the field because they're walking very slow. So once already the word gets out that these old men walked into the field with their stick, they took everything probably. Right. Whatever's left, the aniyim say, pass, forget it, hefker. So once the old men walk in the field, anybody's subject now to take the leket, because you could assume the aniyim gave up hope that anything is left. Okay, that's the first opinion of what nimushot are. The second opinion is, that she says, zekenim aniim. Incidentally, I'm reading that she. Zekenim aniim, old poor people, holchim al mish'antam. They walk on their stick, with their stick, benahat, very very slowly. Viru'in kol shibolet v'shibolet. And they see every single stalk. Once they go through the field, and aniim says, no shot, there's anything left. And if there is anything left, forget about it. And therefore, anybody can take it. The Gemara continues, Rishtaki Shamad, Likute Batar, Likute. Ah, you know what Nimushot means? These are the second rounders. Means the Ani would make one round through the field, Likute, they would collect, and then they would go a second time and see if they forgot anything.
once already the field has been inspected twice, nikute batal nikute, the aniim say forget it, there's nothing left. Therefore, everybody would be subject to take the leket. So now the Gemara says, "Amai, wait, why is this true? Nehi da aniim dehacha miya asher." True, the aniim in the local town, they find out about it right away, that the old men walked through, or they find out there was a second collection. So it's yi'ush midat. They know. Therefore, I understand why it's yi'ush legabe the aniim that are in town. However, ika aniim biduchta aharita, but there's aniim that live in a different city, de lo miya asher, that they did not make yi'ush yet. Oh, and what do you see? You still see that even though they didn't make Yi'ush, since we could assume that when they find out, they will make Yi'ush, it's a classic case of Yi'ush Shelo Midat. And what does it say? It says that everybody else can take the leket. So you see why Yi'ush Shelo Midat is indeed Yi'ush. So this is a proof to Rava, a question against Abaye. So Gemara says, Amre, no, Kevan di'ika anim hacha. Since there are poor people living in this town, the aniim that are out of town, they make yi'ush initially. They never even had a thought to take from this leket over here. They make yi'ush initially. Why? Because they say, oh, the aniim in the town are going to take everything. So that's not a case of yi'ush shelo midat. It's yi'ush midat. I'm not, when we said that the people of the rich people, let's say, non-aniim can take the leket, we're only worried about the people of the town. Once the people of the town find out that there was the old men went through the field, or the second collection, they find out about it because they're in the town. They make yi'ush. What about the aniim that are out of the town? They never were even in the running. They made yi'ush from the onset because they said, we're never going to get anything. How are we going to get anything? These guys in the town are going to take everything. So therefore, I'm not worried about them. So we have no question against Abaye. Tashema. Gemara continues its proofs. Okay, now the Gemara is going to go the other way. It's going to ask a question on Nava. Tashema kitziot baderech. Okay, what are kitziot? So that she tells us, te'inim. These are figs. She kotzitzim otam be'ismal. They cut them with like a knife. Umo'al shalem zav. And what happens when you cut it with a knife? The juice oozes out of the fig. And now it's all wet. So what do? They lie them out in the field in order for them to dry. So it says, Kitziot baderech. Let's say you found these dried figs, not in a guy's field. Of course, it's on a private field. You have no right to go and take it. You found it on the derech. Ve'afilu besad sadeh. Even though it was next to somebody else's field. Kitziot of dried figs. Ve'chen te'ena. Or you found a regular fig, hanotel laderech. That is, guy has a tree, let's say, and the tree overhangs his property, but also overhangs the public domain. And some of the figs are found under that tree that belongs to such and such a guy. So the deen is, when you find these figs in the public, umatzat einim tachten, you found figs under the tree, mutarot mishum gezel. Anybody who finds it, keeps it. There's no problem. There's no stealing over there. Because again, the Gemara is going to assume here that the owner, he gives up hope. Why does he give up hope? He gives up hope because his rationale is, listen, they're in the public domain. People that are going to walk by are going to rationalize that this fell from total strangers in the street. And therefore, they're going to pick it up. Therefore, no one's going to say, oh, it must belong to the guy under the tree. They're going to rationalize. You know how people are. They rationalize. Oh, it's probably not the guy's under the tree. It's probably somebody else's. Therefore, they're going to take it. So therefore, the deen is, no problem. You can take it because the owner for sure made Yehusha gave up hope. And once that's the case, the Gemara is a side point. Ufturot min ma'asir. The law is that you have to give ma'asir on all product. However, if an item is hefker, if an item is ownerless, you don't have to give ma'aser. So therefore the Gemara says, Ufturot min ma'aser. That's the first part of the braita. Bezetim ubaharubim asur. However, when it comes to olives and carob, it's going to be asur. Same case. You found these items in the public domain. The deen is, you can't take them. So now we have contradictory statements in the Braita itself. So Gemara begins its analysis. The first case in the Braita is not a question according to Abaye. Why not? It seems, what was the case? The guy walking in the street, he found these dried figs. We say, what? Keep it. What do you mean? But does the owner know about it? So the Gemara says, yeah, don't worry, the owner knows about it. Agav the hashive, since these items are hashuv, they're expensive or they're important, mimashmesh behu. He always is checking to see the status of them. Te'enana meh medai yadia, the figs, he knows that what? Dinatra. He knows that these things are prone to fall. So what is he always doing? He's checking, hey, did anything fall over here? So therefore, you could assume that when the guy picked it up already, the guy who found it, for sure the owner's made Yush already. Because this is something that is not too big of a lapse from the time that the guy drops it to the time that the guy finds out about it. Like we would know, something that's important to you, you're always going to look, is it there? Is it there? Oh, is it there? So therefore, our whole question in Abaye is, listen, when you picked it up, the guy didn't know about it. Yush only came later on. No, not in this case. Yush comes immediately. Because the guy, he's sensitive to these items because they're expensive and he knows that they fall. So he's constantly monitoring it. So those are the cases where the guy made Yehusha. That's why he can pick it up. No question according to Abaye. Ela Sefa. But according to the Sefa case, what was the Sefa case? That was where, let's say, olives or carobs fell on the floor. So what did it say? It's asut to pick it up. Oh, why is it asut to pick it up? Seemingly, according to Rava, let's assume that he's going to make Yehush later on. So what? Yehusha lo midat. Have a Yush, which means, according to Abaye, this last part over here is not a question. Why is it not a question? So the Tosafot speaks out. Tosafot over here in the Dibur Matil Te'ena says, the Sefa is not a question. He says like this. Bishlama, meaning the Tosafot, Pirush. Bishlama le Abaye. Te'ena muteret, the fig is going to be muteret. Why? Or the date, the fig. Since they normally fall, the guy makes yush right away. He says, for sure the guy that's going to find it is going to take it. He's not going to assume that it fell from the tree. Oh, that's the key. The olives and the carobs, they don't generally fall from the tree. So therefore, according to Abaye, I know why it's Asur. Because since they don't fall, so therefore the guy's mind is not really making Yush right away. He doesn't check them all the time. They don't fall. So it's Yush lo midat. Good, Asur. Masha'ekin, according to Rava, so what, they don't generally fall? You hold. The bottom line, if the guy would find out that they fell, and it would make Yush, so therefore the Yush is considered Yush retroactive. So why shouldn't the guy be able to keep it? So the Gemara says, "Rava Kasha, Dektani bizitim harubim asur." Amar Rabbi Abu Shani Zayid Hoil veHazuto Muchia Halav. Olives have a distinct quality that it seems every field owner has his style, and his olives have a certain look to them. And even if you find the olives on the ground, a place of a person is his place, which means each olive of each field has its distinct qualities. So therefore, the reason why, even Rava will agree, the guy doesn't make Yush over here, because the guy says, I'll be able to recover it. So therefore, even the whole logic of Rabbah was, when he finds out, he'll make Yush. But even Rabbah will agree, when the guy finds out, he's not going to make Yush. So therefore, the guy cannot keep it. So that's the story in this case over here. But the olives, when the guy walks in the street, you say, these olives over here, when the guy finds out, they fell? He goes, no problem. They're going to come back. Because they have a distinct look. So the Gemara says, Iyacheh, afilu resha nameh. So then even the resha then should be so, which means if you tell me everybody's field has a distinct property and a distinct look, so therefore the deen should be by the figs also, that what? you shouldn't be able to keep them. Because the guy should rationalize the same way. Oh, even though they fell, they'll come back to me. Because, you know, every field is its field, and every owner is his place, is his place. So why in the Reshah did you say that by the figs, you can keep them? Amara papa, te'ena im nefilatanim eset. That's the difference. When a fig falls on the floor, what happens? It's soft, so therefore it becomes ma'us, it becomes all spoiled. It loses its beauty, it loses its image. So therefore, in the Resha, there's no question. Of course you could keep it. Because the guy makes yush. According to everybody, the guy makes yush. According to everybody, he makes yush immediately. Because the guy's monitoring them. When they fall, they fall. And even if you don't want to say, you want to say he makes yush later on, but he'll make yush. According to Rava, yush lo midad, have yush. How come he doesn't say, I'll recover it? Because once the thing splats on the floor,
doesn't want it.
He doesn't want it, and not only doesn't want it, but there's no way he can recover it, because it loses its mark. So therefore, it gives up hope. Mashaker in the Sefer by the olives. You're right. Normally, yush shelo midat have yush, but in this case, it's not going to make yush because you know what? The olive's hard. It'll fall on the floor. It doesn't get spoiled. On the contrary, you know what? It's coming back to me. Why is it coming back to me? It has a mark on it. Good. So therefore, each rabbi can answer up this braita. It is not a question on either opinion. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen. Amen.